Hello everyone, my name's Mark Ling and I'm from AmazingSelf.com. Today I've got with me a very special guest. Her name is Marie Forleo. Marie is a best-selling author, speaker, online entrepreneur, Nike athlete, fitness personality, dating and relationships guru, a dance choreographer. She's also been a life coach to several Fortune 500 executives. The thing about Marie is that she has defied conventional wisdom and achieved phenomenal success across multiple industries. Marie has appeared in the New York Times, Shape Magazine, on The Rachel Ray Show, ABC's 2020, CNN.com, Forbes.com, HSN, and has done countless interviews on radio and TV. What excites me about bringing you this interview today is that Marie is a true Renaissance woman who has a lot to share with you from her success in the four main areas of personal development. That's health, wealth, mindset, and relationships. Without further ado, I want to introduce you guys to the amazing Marie Forleo. Welcome along, Marie.
Oh, thank you so much, Mark. It's so great to be here with you.
It's great to have you here. And first of all, I was just wondering if you'd mind inspiring everybody with your background story. It's quite something.
Yeah, it's so funny because as you were reading all the things that I've done, it makes me sound a bit schizophrenic. But the truth is, you know, it was really interesting how I got here. I started off, you know, studying finance when I was an undergrad. And my first job after college was on the New York Stock Exchange on Wall Street. So I was a trading assistant on the floor of the New York Stock Exchange. It was amazingly exciting. You know, the potential to make a lot of money was there. It was in the hustle and bustle of everything. And after about 6 months at that job, I had this feeling inside that I was meant to do something else. I didn't know what that something else was going to be, but I knew I wasn't meant to be on the floor. I knew that being in finance wasn't going to be my career. And it terrified me, you know, because my parents had just invested all this money in my education. I had done so many things to get this job. And you know, I felt like, well, this isn't it. What do I do? That intuitive hunch that I was supposed to do something else got so overpowering that I decided to quit my job and search for what I was supposed to do with my life. And because I was very passionate about creativity and art, but I was also very passionate about business and making money, I put my brain to work and I came up with, well, you know, maybe I want to go into publishing, you know, into magazines because there's art, there's commerce, it's this blend of creativity and making money. So I landed myself a job at a magazine called Gourmet Magazine, which was all about food and, you know, beautiful wine and things like that. And I got a job as an ad sales assistant on the advertising side. So, you know, got to work, really exciting. But then the same thing started to happen. About 6 months into my job, I realized, well, God, I don't want to be my boss. You know, like I don't want to climb up this corporate ladder. If I don't want to be my boss and I don't want to be the publisher of a magazine, what the hell am I doing here? I've got to get out. So then I thought to myself, well, maybe I'm leaning too much on the business side. Maybe I need to go more creative. And so I, you know, finagled my way into a fashion magazine and it was called Mademoiselle. So I got into the fashion department and I began work as a fashion assistant, which all that means is I would, you know, go around to showrooms and have the privilege of going to places like Calvin Klein and, you know, looking at swimsuits and bringing them back to the magazine and helping decide what went in the pages. And again, it was very glamorous, very fun. And I thought, well, maybe this is it. You know, this is so much fun. I'm like a young girl in New York City. I get to play with clothes all day. I'm getting great money. And, of course, it started to happen again. I had that nodding feeling in my stomach, that knot that just says, God, this is not what you're supposed to be doing with your life. Now, at that time, Mark, I was engaged to be married, and my fiance and I were living in this tiny little studio apartment in the West Village in New York City. And I remember going online one day when I should have been working, and I found this article about life coaching. And it was this whole thing about this brand new industry that was just being born and that there was folks out there starting this entire like business around supporting other people, you know, strategically helping them, whether it was plan their career or plan their business or plan their life. And something inside lit up in a way that I had never experienced with any of the other jobs that I did or anything else that I had in my educational career. And it sounded crazy because at that time I was all of 23 years old, But something in me said, you know what, you have to pursue this. So what I figured I would do is sign up for a coaching institute. It was actually Coach University. They had a 3-year program at that time. And I started studying how to be a life and business coach at night while I still worked at Mademoiselle during the day. Interestingly enough, about 6 months went by. I was still really, really into the whole coaching thing. But then I got a call from HR, and it was about a job offer from Vogue. Now, Vogue magazine, as you probably know, like in the fashion world and in the magazine world, is the queen bee. So I remember thinking to myself and even talking to my fiance at that time and going like, wow, there's this incredible opportunity at Vogue. It's very prestigious. It's more money. You know, it's a definite career track. But I'm really digging all this coaching stuff that I'm learning. And it was one of those proverbial forks in the road. And I remember thinking to myself, like, what do you really want, Marie? You know, you're 23 years old. This is a big decision. And that little voice inside of me said, screw Vogue, do this weird life coaching thing. So I got the guts up. I turned down the job. I quit, you know, working for corporations. And I just started, you know, went back to restaurant work. I started bartending and waiting tables and doing anything that I could to bring in money while I began to build my coaching business. So that was all well and good. And it actually started off pretty great. You know, I put up a website, I started publishing an email newsletter, and little by little I was getting clients. Then I came across a class about how to use something called ebooks as a marketing tool for your coaching practice. And I was like, well, you know, if I'm in this business, I need to learn how to market, and that sounds like a great idea. And so I signed up for this like little mini course. It was like a 4-week course about, you know, using ebooks to market your coaching practice. Luckily, it was with a guy named Dean Jackson. And I don't know if you know of Dean Jackson, Mark, but he's pretty legendary in the marketing world. So I had no idea I was stepping into just a really good situation. And because I was still fresh out of school, I was very in the habit of doing homework. You know, when you're in college, at least for me, I was very dedicated to doing homework. So when Dean gave us homework for this course we were in, I really took it seriously and did it. And he said, just pick a topic that you're passionate about, that you would like to research, that you would write an ebook about, that you think other people would enjoy reading, that they would get value from, and that could support the growth of your coaching business. So I thought to myself, I was like, what do all my clients talk to me about right now? Well, most of them were women, and they all wanted to talk about relationships. And I love to talk about relationships. I was, you know, recently engaged. It was just a hot topic, and I figured, you know what, this is something I could really get into. I don't know where it came from, Mark, but the title Make Every Man Want You just appeared in my mental theater, and I just thought it was the best thing. I don't know if you've ever had this experience, not to sound egotistical, but you know when you have a good idea and you just know it's a good idea? You know, something about that idea is just on. I remember buying the URL and going, okay, I'm going to do this. So fast forward a couple weeks, I write this ebook called Make Every Man Want You. And it was all about, you know, how to get a guy, how to have a great relationship. But then there was one big problem. Out of writing this book about guys and relationships and love, I discovered I didn't want to marry the guy I was engaged to. It was devastating. It was awful. Our funds were commingled. You know, it was embarrassing. Here I am, this, you know, brand new kind of life coach person trying to put together a book to sell to other people. Meanwhile, a very act of writing the book brought up so many things that were incomplete and just not worked out in me that it was just, I was like, oh my God, this, what am I going to do? So it was a real crossroads. Writing that initial version of the book was a real blessing, because it turned out that, you know, I just gave a hard look in the mirror and I said to myself, you know, I cannot be a life coach selling love and happiness and wealth if that's not what I'm living. So I took the ebook, which was actually starting to sell now, off the market. I broke off my engagement and I made a commitment to myself. I said, you know, there's got to be information out there about relationships, about happiness, about, you know, making great money that exists, but I haven't found it yet. You know, and it was hard. It was very hard for me to come to that realization, but I mean, I'm really grateful for all the training that I got at Coach University, but I felt like the tools I had at that moment in time were somewhat old school and outdated. So just to give you an example, you know, I was always taught that it's all about writing like these very clear goals and doing affirmations and writing in your journal every day and meditating. And, you know, it's just this whole list of things to do to improve yourself. But the problem was they weren't working for me. I felt like I was like, what is wrong? I'm doing everything that everyone says you're supposed to do, but it feels like crap. So I just made up my mind. I decided to go on a new odyssey to find information, not only about relationships that actually work, but just about how to have a great life and have it really work from the inside out. So I went on my journey and I started finding new teachers, and I discovered this whole wealth of information about living in the moment, not from an old school kind of esoteric place, but from a really practical standpoint about understanding that you have a mind, but you're not your mind, and getting that life is not meant to be lived for some day. You know what I mean? It's not about getting the goal someday or about reaching something out there or being happy when you get, you know, the big paying job, or you get the boyfriend or the husband or the girlfriend or whatever you're searching for. And it was a real paradigm shift for me, because everything previous to that point was so future oriented or working on your past, and no one had ever given me a toolkit to really access my genius right now. And so I started experimenting with these new tools, and very quickly my world opened up. One of the things that I had hidden from most people, and even for myself to some degree, was that I always had all these different passions. You know, if you think back to the beginning of the story when I tried working on Wall Street and then in advertising, and I tried all these different things, part of the reason for that was because I had a lot of different interests, and I thought there was something wrong with me because I couldn't express them all in one job. What I didn't realize at that time earlier was that I'm really a multi-passionate entrepreneur. And when I started playing with all this live in the moment stuff, I started getting real with what I really wanted. I had a passion for hip hop and dance. I had a passion for fitness. I had a passion for spirituality, for business, for marketing, for all kinds of stuff. And I finally got to the place where I was like, you know what? I am just going to let myself do everything. I'm going to let myself go, you know, start taking dance classes, because I had a passion for, again, hip hop, but I never had any dance training. I really loved coaching. And now that I was learning about all this live in the moment stuff, I felt like I had real tools to share with people that actually worked, because they were working for me. And my life quickly turned around. It went from being pretty painful and, you know, happy on the exterior, but miserable on the interior, to being very fully integrated and having a multifaceted life that started working. I started making a lot more money. As soon as I started taking dance classes, my teachers, who were hip hop teachers at that time, all told me, they're like, Marie, you should be teaching. You're really, really good. I listened to them, which is something that I would never have done in the past, because I would have had too many insecure thoughts. And very quickly after I started teaching dance, taking dance, I started teaching. And then I think it was like my second hip hop class or so, someone in the back of my class was actually a producer from MTV. And she came up to me after the class was over and she's like, you're really good. We're looking for a choreographer for a new show this season. Do you want to come in and audition and try out? I was totally blown away, Mark, because you have to get that in the dance world. Like, being at this time, I was about 25 years old. 25 is ancient. You know, it's like over the hill. So I was really excited. I went in, landed a job with MTV, and then everything started taking off from there. My coaching practice started making a lot more money. I started doing fitness videos. Eventually, I got picked up by Nike as one of their first Nike dance athletes and master trainers. So I helped them develop and deliver a program called the Nike Rockstar Workout. And around this same time, I also met the man of my dreams. And this time it was completely different than my first go around. Josh, who is my fiance today, we've actually been together for over 7 years, best relationship of my life. Around the time when fitness and dance and everything was starting to take off, I kept getting these emails from people who had heard about the original little ebook, you know, a couple years back. And they're saying, well, God, I heard you, you know, did this book called Make Every Man Want You. Why can't I find it? And we would send emails out going, I'm so sorry. It's being revised. It's off the market. And finally, I said to myself, I said, you know, there are people wanting information from me, and it's really not a smart business move to not have something to sell them. And, you know, I'd gone through so much. I'd learned so many new tools. I had changed my life so dramatically, and my relationships were working better than ever, that I felt like it was really my obligation to get this information down and do a new version of the book that would serve people in a tremendous way. So that's what I did. I sat down. I wrote Make Every Man Want You. Because I was doing so much in the world of dance and fitness and traveling around, I didn't have the bandwidth to go to a traditional publisher. I just didn't want the headache. I figured if I could hire class A designers and copy editors and, you know, everyone that could help me put together a great self-published book, that I could just do it myself, get the product out there, and just see how it goes. So we published Make Every Man Want You as a self-published, you know, paperback book, and we sold about 8,000 copies within an 18-month period. It was really, really good. That's with no major media, no advertising, simply internet marketing and good old-fashioned word of mouth. So once that happened, I felt like I was onto something. I felt like, all right, this book has legs. I don't want to be in the self-publishing business, but I do want to get this message out there to as many women as I could possibly reach. So that's when I got myself an agent. We sold it to McGraw-Hill, and the newest version, which is the current version that's out right now, was published in 2008, and it's now in 9 languages and counting. So I'm really, really proud of that.
Wow, that's really impressive.
Yeah, thank you. It's a great little book. It's a bit of a Trojan horse. You know, the full title is Make Every Man Want You, How to Be So Irresistible You'll Barely Keep from Dating Yourself. Really fun, but it's more about how to have a great life and very spiritual kind of concepts, more than like tricks to get a guy. So that brought me up to the book. And then, you know, I started getting a lot of emails from women who had been following me for quite some time, because I had kept my newsletter publishing up and people were keeping up with what I was doing. And women were asking me, like, how are you running a business and you're doing all this cool stuff and you don't seem crazy? Like, you don't seem like a lunatic. You actually seem pretty normal and happy. And I said, you know, I really practice what I preach. But the one part of the puzzle that I had not been sharing as a quote unquote life coach was my passion for marketing, and specifically for internet marketing, and for, you know, creating and developing programs online that you can sell to people all over the world. So I had another one of those moments where a title came to me, and this time it was called Rich, Happy, and Hot. And I was like, whoa, you know, that's really cool. I like that. And I realized at that moment that that was the next evolution of my business, that it was now time for me to take all of my experience in health and fitness, in relationships, and now also in business, and merge it together under an umbrella brand called Rich, Happy, and Hot, where I could teach women not only how to make money doing what they love, but also how to have a great life while you do it. Because it's an interesting balance, you know, not that it's any less of a challenge for men, Mark, but I think as women, you know, there's so much kind of this legacy, you know, from ancient times where we're so used to like doing everything around the house and taking care of the kids. And, you know, that's kind of in our genes. And then when you add on the financial responsibilities and the creative responsibilities of running a business, many of us feel like, oh my God, do I have to be superwoman? You know, so it's time for us to kind of rewrite the rules and have new tools on how to do business in the most efficient and effective way. And also not to lose our femininity while we do it, you know, because I know, you know, Josh doesn't want to have a masculine business owner as a partner. It's like he wants a soft, feminine, loving lady. And sometimes I need to draw upon my, you know, kind of badass, hard ass side in business. And sometimes I need to really let that go. So I figured Rich, Happy, and Hot was an opportunity for me to address women on multiple levels on what it really means to have it all in the modern times. So, that's kind of where we're at. And I think the biggest, most recent development for me was what happened last year when one of my personal idols and mentors, Tony Robbins, his folks gave us a call, and they were doing a new program called the New Money Masters. And it was about people who are doing really well online, but that also have great lifestyles. You know, they have interesting stories and yeah, they're doing great things and, you know, but they also really pay attention to their family and to giving back and all that kind of good stuff. And at the time when they called me, they had interviewed 11 people and all of them were men. So they didn't have any women entrepreneur. And they were like, we think you could be it. And I was like, well, I would love to be it. So we kind of went back and forth, and it turned out that they selected me for this program, and I flew out to Tony's house and he interviewed me, and it was kind of one of the coolest full circle moments ever. Because I told him, I said, you know, it was less than 10 years ago that I was listening to your tapes and you completely inspired me to do what I'm doing right now. And it was a very, very cool thing. So that's kind of where we're at today.
That's fantastic. I just wanted to like just go back just a moment. You're talking about living in the moment, and yes. Just to clarify that for people, like that doesn't necessarily mean not like spending all the money that you've got right now and having the best couple of weeks of your life.
No, absolutely. It's more of a philosophical and almost like a spiritual practice. It's certainly nothing, you know, you could take, oh, I'm going to live for the moment and like blow all my cash and run off to Vegas or, you know, do something crazy like that. That's definitely not what we're talking about. For me, I noticed that so much of my time and attention was either in the future, worrying about how things were going to turn out or working on goals or stressing or, you know what I mean? Like just constantly off in future oriented type of scenarios. Or I was beating myself up about the past going like, well, why did you stay on Wall Street so long? God, if you would have got out of there sooner, you know what I mean? Maybe you could have started your business sooner. Or even little things like at parties, like, why did you say that to that person? That was really dumb. You know, so my attention was splintered. It was never where I was actually at. It was almost like my body was present, but my mind and my being was someplace else, if that makes sense. And yeah. I didn't realize what a huge detriment that was to my ability to be successful and to be happy.
Yeah, I mean, for me, you clarify if you think I've got this wrong here, but for me, what you're saying, though, is it's about enjoying the whole journey, but yes. It doesn't mean that you're not planning ahead.
Yes. And it's actually what you just brought up is a very interesting paradox that I've been spending a lot of time thinking about and also talking about lately, because if you want to be successful in anything, of course you can't have all of your attention in this moment. You do have to have a future vision, but most of us make the mistake of being lopsided. You know what I mean? Either there's so much attention on the future that we do miss the journey, we miss those incredible moments, or we have no ability to slow down and actually take a break. And then, you know, people that don't have enough of a future focus find themselves, you know, just bouncing all over the place because there's not a through line. You know, there's no clear vision that's pulling them ahead. So they're very susceptible to get distracted by every bright and shiny object that comes their way. And they seem really busy, but they're never actually accomplishing anything.
Yeah, like my stepmother, when I was in high school, because my father remarried when I was 16, she's always been someone that saves and saves and saves and is always looking ahead to 3 or 4, 5 years in the future. And yes. I've been sort of noticing and watching that. I mean, I can't change her. Like, you can't change people. I'm not that kind of person. But the thing about it is, even now, because that was 15 years ago, even now her whole life is, just doesn't seem to be, I mean, she's happy, but not as happy as she could be, because she's always, to me, always looking ahead 5 years in the future and not living, like not enjoying life right now. Because life right now, I believe, and I believe that there are probably a lot of people listening to this that could say the same thing, that life right now could actually be pretty good if you actually took a moment to enjoy everything that's happening right now, whether that be the challenges that you're facing. Some of the successes that you're going through.
Yes. I mean, even just the simple act of recognizing that you're breathing, I know this sounds silly, but you know, anyone listening to this audio, you're listening to it probably right on a funky little thing called a computer, or maybe even a phone, or something called an iPod, which for much of the world is an outrageous luxury. Do you know what I mean? So like taking inventory of the very small things and going like, wow, well, I do have a roof over my head right now. Okay, that's great. I'm breathing. Okay, check. I can see through both eyes, or maybe I can hear, or I can walk on both feet. You start looking at what you have in this moment, and all of a sudden, you really start to train yourself to look for what's working. And then when things that aren't working pop up, you have this incredible momentum and this energy to kind of almost lay over it, you know, so you can start looking for solutions. So it's a very, very practical way of training yourself to be, and it's especially practical for handling really big challenges.
I think for me, one thing that's really got me in the moment right now at this stage of my life has been the birth of my own son.
Yes.
Because children grow up so fast. I know they grow up fast, even though he's my first son, because my little sister was born when I was 17. So, and she's already in high school already, so it didn't take all that long.
Right.
Yeah, I try to soak in every moment that I can with my little boy. He's only like 7 weeks old at the time of this recording. Yeah, I mean, I'm sure a lot of people have a lot of things going in on their lives on a similar sort of scale. Maybe not, you may not have a newborn son or something. You may have something else going on, but, you can always be in a never ending trap of thinking in the future and not enjoying the present very, very easily.
Yes.
And yet you can feel on top of the world when you're thinking about things that are going on right now, even if it's just as little as, like you say, thinking about breathing. Like I had a really bad chest infection a few weeks ago, and I was thinking to myself, man, it's really interesting how the moment you lose one little body part, you start to realize – like your lungs, they're not working properly. You start to realize how valuable each one of them are. And then you think, man, what about those people out there that have only got one eye, or they're blind, or,
yes.
You know, I'm actually very, very lucky. I'm very thankful for every single body part that I've got. And you know what? It may not always be that way. And so, you know, 30, 40 years time when I'm an old man or something like that, you know, so it pays to, like, every time I get sick, I pretty much think to myself, I'm going to enjoy every moment the moment I'm well, and I do.
Yes, no, it is. It is the simple stuff. And, you know, it's also the place, you know, the present moment when we're really here. And when I say being really here, I mean, like, you know, if you're sitting in a chair right now, like really feeling your butt in the chair and just looking around and taking in the visual information that's around you, you know, not necessarily labeling it, but just taking it in as sensory information, feeling things. I truly believe that when you're here, body, mind, and soul, you're also greatly tapped into like a direct channel to a greater intelligence, you know, whether you call it God or spirit or just creative source or, you know, whatever your belief may be. I always find, you know, it's interesting when I'm in the shower and I'm really just like lathering up the hair and sudsing up with the body, I get amazing ideas. It's like you're a pure channel for creative like juice to download right into you. And whenever I find myself, you know, striving a little too hard, working a little too hard in the mind, like future focused, I don't know if you've ever experienced this, Mark. It's like your brain just kind of goes dead. You know, it's like it just goes kaput. And
yeah,
it's usually when I get back to fun and get back to really being where I'm at, does the creativity comes back, the passion comes back, the insight comes back. All that good stuff is available to us always if we're here to experience it and to receive it.
Yeah, I think that's really well said. Now, to me, it's really obvious though to me that you couldn't have possibly achieved all this phenomenal success across such a range of industries without having a lot of self-belief and determination. Marie, can you describe where that self-belief and motivation comes from and how other people can find it within themselves to develop a similar positive belief system about themselves?
Absolutely. So I have to say, I feel very fortunate to have had like ridiculously cool parents who repeatedly told me, you know, you can be whatever you want, whatever you want to do, you can do. And were very supportive of all my crazy little creative things that I wanted to do as a child. Now, that being said, you know, as all of us grow up, we all have self-doubt. Every single person. I have a ton of it as well. But what I realized pretty quickly on was the worst thing that could happen was that like something wasn't going to work out, but I had enough curiosity in me that I needed to know if I could do it. So for example, with hip hop, you know, I've always loved hip hop dance. Again, I've never had any formal training. The only training I used to have was like doing the moonwalk across my mom's linoleum floor in the kitchen. You know what I mean? Like that's the degree of it. But I remember like, why don't I just go take class? Like what's the worst thing that can happen if I go take class? Nothing. No one's really going to laugh at me. And then after taking one class, it's like you just take a small action, and that small action is like a vitamin to your ability to believe in yourself. You know, and then one small action, you do something else, and then it builds on it like a building block. And all of a sudden, there develops this momentum. And for me, once I had stacked enough experience where I said, you know, screw it, I'm just going to go out there and give it a try, and whatever happens, happens. I'm only on the planet once. Once I stacked enough of the experiences, not of necessarily succeeding, but of just doing it, it was like a building block of self-belief and motivation, where now I'm so much more able to take bigger risks, you know, to just try things and say, you know what, if it doesn't work out, who cares? You know, within probably like 60, 70 years, I'm going to be dust. No one's going to remember. And if they do, screw them. You know, it's not going to be a big deal. So answering the second part of the question, which is how can people develop a level of self-belief and of motivation to take themselves forward, here's what I would suggest. Start small. You know, like if you want to write an article, for example, and you've never written anything before, but you have a dream of writing, it's like sit yourself down, you know, say, okay, I'm just going to do like 300 words or 500 words or maybe just a short article and submit it as a guest blog post. Like just doing that one thing. Don't worry about a book. Don't worry about being a New York Times bestselling author yet. You know, just do one small thing. Take that one small action. And when you do that, you can stack on it with something else, you know, with the next action. Maybe it's reaching out to someone who has a blog to see if they would, you know, want you as a guest poster. Again, I'm making this up just off the top of my head, but the point is it's about taking small actions consistently that lead to huge successes. That's all it really comes down to. And the other thing I want to talk about is this. I believe that confidence is hugely overrated. There are so many times, Mark, that I am completely not confident. In more recent times, just as far as, I guess, about a year and a half ago, I launched a high-level adventure mastermind for women entrepreneurs. It's called the Rich, Happy, and Hot Mastery Program. And, you know, it was a pretty hefty price tag, $15,000. You know, I had never charged that much money before for a particular program. I was terrified, but I realized that I would never make it to the point where I felt confident. I knew that I had value to share. So it wasn't about the value of the program. I was absolutely clear on that. But I wasn't confident in myself or confident that people would sign up. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
Like it was like, you know, I was terrified.
Yeah, it's outside your comfort zone.
Completely. So if I would have waited until I felt confident or comfortable or, you know what I mean, any of that stuff, the program would have never happened. I would have never not only made that money or impacted people's lives. And now that program has like tripled in numbers. Not only are we making more, but we're serving more women. They are happier than ever. And it was all because I didn't wait to feel confident. So that's another big secret that I would strongly, strongly suggest. Do not wait to feel confident. You probably won't ever feel confident. But again, if you take those small actions every day, just say, screw it, I'm just going to do this right now. That's, you know, what starts building it up, and you just get momentum.
Yeah, no, absolutely. I mean, it's kind of like, well, from a man's perspective anyway, it's kind of like picking up women. I don't know any guy that doesn't feel a bit of fear of rejection or something when they're wanting to walk up to someone that they like the look of in a bar or a club or something like that. But
absolutely.
You know what, if you don't, then you're never going to see that person again.
Absolutely. Same exact principle.
That's where I met my wife, in a bar about 7 years ago. It wouldn't have happened if I hadn't if I hadn't have gone up and talked to her, for instance.
Right. If you didn't get over that, those little fear or those little butterflies that you had and just went up and said, hey, Michelle.
Yeah. That's it. That's exactly it.
Cool.
But also the other side of things is in business, because I coach people in business as well, and I've always practiced a philosophy of failing fast and you may as well fail as fast as you can,
yes,
and learn from your mistakes than try and wait for everything to be perfect. I mean, put it this way, imagine if a little one-year-old was learning to walk and all they did was sat there watching the other kids learning to walk and didn't want to take their first step until they knew everything about how walking worked. How long do you think it would take them to learn how to walk as opposed to if they just kept falling over and figuring it out that way?
I love it. Absolutely. They would probably be like 8 or 9, you know, still like sitting on their bums before.
They might not ever walk.
Totally. Absolutely.
Yeah. And I think of it the same way. Now, another thing that strikes me about you is, okay, you're juggling a lot of things, and it's not like you've given up things that you enjoy. I mean, you're still doing, you're still doing your fitness stuff. You're running a successful business. You've got a lot of things going on. How do you go about maximizing your own personal productivity to make sure that you actually can get all these things done?
One of the things that's been super important and useful for me recently has been the power of scheduling and of really like letting go of a to-do list per se and putting things straight into the schedule. Like, you know, we'll make a master project list and kind of have everything in electronic form of everything that we're working on. So, you know, I can see it, my team can see it, like everybody's on the same page. And then what we literally do is for me, I take a look and go, okay, what's most important? You know, because as creative people, we all can have like 100 projects on that list, 100 goals that we want to accomplish. But especially if you're a multi-passionate entrepreneur, you know, some people are very, very comfortable or they have a tight niche. They're like super in it and that's great. For me, that was just never, it's not how I'm built. So I always have to be very careful about choosing, you know, 2 or 3 things max to work on at one time and letting everything else kind of hang out at the bottom of that list, you know, and very consciously just knowing like, you know what, I'll get there when I get there. But what we do then is, you know, start breaking those projects down into tasks and then literally putting the tasks in the calendar. I found that that helps me tremendously when it comes to managing my own time and getting things done. So for example, you know, just putting time in the calendar, Marie, this is your appointment with yourself. This is yoga time. This is time to write, you know, the next article, the next blog post or create a video. You know, this is when we're working on promotions for the next campaign. And so I literally schedule things in now. I never used to do that before. My business wasn't as big, so I didn't have the same kind of pressures as I do now. But I will tell you that over the last year and a half to 2 years, I have scaled back a lot on some of the fitness stuff because I realized that where my time is best spent is in growing the Rich, Happy, and Hot brand, because that allows me to like inject fitness, but I don't have to be the one necessarily teaching it. You know, I can bring in other experts to have the same impact that I want to have on women, but not have to do it all myself.
So you're still keeping yourself physically fit though, right? You're just not teaching
it? Oh, yeah. No, I'm not 300 pounds, no. No, I'm still definitely. I mean, yoga has become hugely important to me and also dance when I can fit it in. But it's interesting, you know, my passions, I'm watching them transform and evolve as I do. So while I love getting to hip-hop classes when I can, I find that now doing yoga, and there's also we have these amazing pole dancing classes in New York City that are the most incredible, gorgeous, sensual, amazing workout for women that I have ever discovered. Like, amazing. So it's a little balance between like pole dancing and yoga for me.
That's a great thing about New York City. There's a lot of opportunity for these sort of alternate ways of keeping fit.
Yes. Yeah. And it's actually, it's a very beautiful thing for women. If anyone, you know, if you haven't heard of it, you can totally just Google online and find out. There's so many classes, I think, all around the world. If it hasn't crossed over to, you know, to Europe and to where you are, Mark, or down under, it will very soon, because it's an incredible form of fitness that taps into women's ability to not only be sensual, but to really own her curves, no matter what her size, no matter what her age, no matter what her background, and really celebrate the beauty and the joy of being a woman in a very safe and awesomely fun space.
Yeah, it's fantastic. Now, speaking about fitness, what advice would you have for someone listening to this call? Let's say there's men and women listening to this call that perhaps aren't the weight that they wish to be. They might want to lose a few pounds or something like that.
Yes.
But let's say they struggle to keep up with an exercise routine, or they struggle to maintain a healthy diet with everything else going on in their busy lives. What advice would you have for them?
A couple things. Number one, you have to find some form of exercise that you actually enjoy. So even if it takes experimenting, like with kickboxing or with running or with cycling or with yoga, you know, go through every different modality that you can get your hands on, to find the one that works for your spirit and for your body. Number two is you need to get support. I honestly have so much more fun when I go to yoga class with Josh or with girlfriends, or again, with pole dancing, doing it with girlfriends saying, hey, do you want to come today? It just feels like there's a sense of camaraderie. That's for me, one of the biggest clues and secrets to making it stick, is to have people to go with. And frankly, you know, if you have the extra cash, or even if you don't have the extra cash, you need to find it. If you need to hire a personal trainer or someone to hold you accountable, do it. You know, I remember at certain points in my life when fitness was very much at the forefront, you know, when I was learning a lot about it, I would have fitness magazines out. I would talk to my friends about it. I would go to a lot of different classes. So I would use as much multimedia support as well as possible. So in this day and age, think about it. You can have things you can listen to on your iPod. You can make sure that you're subscribed to fitness and health related newsletters that come right to your inbox. I'm sure that there's podcasts that you can listen to online that maybe even have workouts on them, you know, that you can listen to when you're on the go. And then again, I'm going to go back to the power of scheduling. If you schedule something in, just like it's a doctor's appointment, just like it's a meeting with a client, you know, any of those appointments that you would not miss, if it's in the calendar, you need to put your health first. Because as you know, Mark, if you don't have your health, you don't have anything.
Yeah, absolutely. Health before everything.
Absolutely.
Yeah, I happen to use my iPhone for scheduling. So things just sort of pop up on there. I find that nice and easy. Do you happen to use your phone for it, or do you prefer to use your computer? Or
I use Google Calendar, and I also use my iPhone, like the alarm functions as well. So Google Calendar, when I'm online, like if I'm online most of the day, I'll just schedule it so the reminders pop up. But if I'm not mistaken, you can even have Google Calendar text message you. You know what I mean? It can come right.
Oh, really?
Absolutely. I'm pretty sure that that's one of the functions. But again, if someone has an iPhone, which I do as well, you know, I often use even the alarms, like to remember. Just last night, I'm starting a new vitamin supplement series, and there's like an AM when you take your vitamins, and then you take them again in the PM. And so I'm using my iPhone's alarm to remind myself, because otherwise I'd forget.
Yeah, I do that kind of thing as well. The other side of things is, for people with iPhones, or even if you've got other types of phones, there's probably similar things, but there are applications anyway that'll integrate with your computer if you want to do it that way as well. To me, it didn't really matter if it integrated as such. It works for me fine just using the phone for most of my scheduling, but yeah, for people that are that way inclined, like there's an application called Things that'll run on both a PC and a Macintosh and on your iPhone, and it'll simultaneously, no matter which one you do your updates on, it'll, you know, update across all your different instances. There's a lot of ways of doing it.
Yeah. Oh, you know, one other big tip, which I find incredibly, incredibly useful. There's actually two more tips to get going and get in shape and sustain shape. One is to use the power of music. Music is such a motivating force. I mean, instantaneously, when you hear a piece of music that you love, that you just love rocking out to, it energizes your body in no other way. The second thing is this: never underestimate what small little bursts of exercise can do for you. So if you've just been out of the game for a long time. And I know how that feels. You know, you haven't been to a gym in ages. You feel really just like, God, I don't even know where to start. I have no energy. Try just doing, you know, 15 squats while you're watching TV, you know, or if you've got 10 minutes, see if you can crank out just 5 pushups. Or, you know, I remember when I was blow drying my hair and I was traveling a lot, I would just do literally do squats and calf raises while I was blow drying my hair in the bathroom. And it sounds silly, but it's like, those are simple little ways just to get some momentum, just to get things moving. Cause you'll find that your body starts to feel different. You know, you got a little bit of soreness and you go, oh, well, this is kind of fun, or I kind of like this. And all of a sudden your motivation shifts and you start looking for bigger pockets of time. And again, you get that iPod going, you get some music you like, you start getting a little sweat going. And before you know it, you know, you're back in the game.
Yeah, no, that makes total sense. I heard an interview on the radio a few days ago with a marathon runner, and he was told that when he was getting coached when he was a bit younger, that whenever he struggled to get off the couch and actually get exercising, like when he felt too tired for it or couldn't do it, he got told by his trainer that he simply had to, you know, whatever time was set in the calendar or whatever, all he has to do is get on his exercise gear, put it on, and run for half a mile down the street. And if he's too tired, he can come back.
And I love it.
And that's the thing. Half the battle is just getting off the couch and getting started.
Right.
So I think that's great, you know, little goals like even just 15 squats. But if you're doing that every day, you'll probably find that after a short amount of time that you're actually doing a lot more than that.
Absolutely, because you start getting the juice and your body starts feeling good and you're like, oh, well, maybe I can do 15 squats and let me do 10 lunges on each side. You know what I mean? Oh, okay, well, maybe I can add in just a little, you know, jog from the top of the house down to the mailbox, you know, and back. And then again, those things add up and do continue to make a huge difference.
I think it's really important what you said earlier as well about making things fun. Like, for instance, doing exercise at home, I found it to be not so fun getting on my gym equipment at times. But then again, if I'm using my little Wii Fit Kit, you know, that could be quite fun. Or I ended up buying myself a treadmill so that I can put the music on and just run, and that's fun for me if I, you know, listening to the music. For me, I play squash. Which is kind of like racquetball for those of you in America. I think you play squash there as well.
Yes.
But, I play a lot of that. So it's just a matter of ringing up one of the guys from the squash club that I'm friends with and going down and having a hit. And gee, you get a good workout by the end of that. And then there's team sports as well. People, might find that more fun than an individual sport. I play a team sport as well once a week, called cricket. I'm just saying that other people out there, you might want to play a team sport like, I don't know, join a team like a basketball team or something like that. I mean, I think some people underestimate how important it is to have fun, or at least as much fun as you can while achieving your goal.
Yeah. Oh, fun is a huge thing. If it ain't fun, I actually even use it over to business as well. Like if projects don't feel like fun, if someone asks me, you know, for an interview, or even if a project on our own plate, you know, it sounded like a great idea, but then when I really look at it, I'm like, God, does this sound like fun? If it doesn't, I don't care how much money it can make, because it won't make that much if it's not fun for me.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, there's always going to be elements of a project that you don't find fun.
Yeah. But I think if the overarching, like, outcome, or just the theme, or, you know, whatever it is, that gives you the juice to kind of go through and you know, and just hammer out those details that need to get done or delegated, or, you know, get someone else to do it. Yeah.
I was going to say, in the long run, delegation, I guess, is the way to go. Like, you get other people to do aspects of a project. Obviously, you can't do that in terms of, like, going to the gym. You can't get someone to go for you. But, but in saying that, you know, when it comes to business, You can, obviously, it's at least at some stage in your business, hire people to do the things you don't enjoy as much.
Yes.
I'll just ask you one more question about weight loss before getting back to something about the people's financial circumstances. One of the biggest obstacles people face when they're trying to actually lose weight is trying to curb cravings for foods that are really bad for them. It's not a very easy thing for people to overcome. What advice do you have for overcoming cravings for junk food?
One of my clients actually is, she's amazing when it comes to this kind of information. And one of the tidbits that she taught me was how, two things actually. One is you need to have replacement foods. You know what I mean? It's very hard for any of us to have a vacuum. You know, if we're trying to shift the way that we're eating and move from junk food to more healthful food, you can't really just eliminate the junk food and not have anything there to replace it. You know, whether it's a crunchy texture or a sweet, you know, taste or something salty, you know, there are those alternatives that are more healthful. So in other words, not leaving yourself in a vacuum position where it's like there's nothing to crunch on. But the other thing is this. Is really slowing down enough to taste food. Interestingly enough, it comes back to the whole practice of living in the moment. In my own life, I know that when I feel stressed or when I'm dealing with emotions that are uncomfortable or that I don't like, very easy to want to just like hammer through a bag of chips, not even tasting it. You know, it's just something to numb the sensations in my body. On the flip side, when I'm more conscious and really paying attention to what I'm putting in my body, I recognize that, you know, even just slowing down to taste something, you want much less of it. You won't go through a whole bag of chips. If you're actually there while you're eating the potato chips and not mentally off in la-la land or just so sucked into the television that you have no awareness of what your body is experiencing, you'll actually eat much less, if not, not even want them at all. It's very, very interesting phenomenon, this whole idea of slowing down. Again, it's been, I'm sure there are studies done on it. I don't have any to quote right now, but I do know that especially if people have, you know, cravings and are somewhat addicted to certain junk food, slowing down, even if you can't stop eating it, but you just slow down and really taste each bite, I can almost guarantee that people will at least have their portions. And, you know, if you can have it once, you can have it again, and you can have it again, and you can have it again until a point comes where you can start making more healthy choices.
Yeah, no, no, I think that's really good advice. And when you say about replacing what you're eating, I just want to throw something out there, and this is something that just popped into my mind when you say that, is sometimes people eat because really deep down, like it's just because they're bored or it's like something to do kind of thing, just out of habit, but yet they don't eat that way when they're out of the house. Would you say that the replacement doesn't always have to be food? Like the replacement could be as little as just being out of the house and going out and visiting a friend or just doing something outside of the situation that seems to cause repetitive eating?
Yeah, that seems to trigger it. Absolutely. I mean, that's ideal. You know, it would be ideal if when you feel that trigger come on, if people slow down and pay attention, it's usually an uncomfortable emotion or sensation, or like you said, pure boredom and habit. You know, it's just habit. You sit down in front of the television and you need something to munch on. It's habit. You walk in and you open the refrigerator and you stare at it. Like, what's there to eat in there? You know what I mean?
We've all done that.
Absolutely. We've all done that. So, again, it comes back to bringing consciousness to it and then going, huh, well, maybe I'm not hungry. Maybe I need a glass of water. Hydration is often mistaken for hunger, dehydration, I should say.
Yeah.
So, you know, taking a glass of water and going, well, let me take a walk. And if I'm still hungry, you know, after the walk's done or after going to talk to a friend or doing some other activity, well, then I'll eat. And a friend of mine pointed out something really interesting. She said, you know, when you think about healthy food versus non-healthy food, you know, all of us can kind of, you know, mow through a whole bag of chips, right? But could you eat 10 bananas?
Right.
No, like if you had like 10 apples sitting in front of you, like, would you really eat all 10 apples? You probably couldn't even get through two. So that's another really interesting kind of food for thought. You know, if you're thinking about healthy food versus non-healthy food, if you just start, you know, bringing it back to the food zone, if you just start replacing, you know, some of those kind of junk food things with more healthful things, you're going to eat a hell of a lot less and get filled up a lot faster.
Yeah, I mean, even if it's just a matter of, okay, you can have that bag of chips, but you've got to eat that banana first.
Yes.
Kind of thing, because then it's hard to actually eat the whole bag.
Exactly. Exactly.
Cool. No, that's really good advice. Okay. Now, just getting back to the income side of things, the wealth side of things, I should say. I want to know, in your opinion, because you've seen a lot of people that are wealthy, and you've worked with people that aren't making money and got them moving as well. So, what are the main differences, though, that you see between people who are wealthy and people who are struggling from paycheck to paycheck?
One of the primary differences is, there's a few. One of them is this idea, and we've all had it, I'm sure, at some point in our lives, of feeling like or being a victim, of feeling like the outside world is dictating what we can and can't do, feeling like somehow, you know, no one's giving us a break, everything's too expensive, no one's going to want what I have. It's this kind of feeling as though the world's doing it to you. You know, and any time I've worked with clients who they always come up with excuses, you know, there's two types of people in the world. There's people that have excuses and there's people that have results. And I've noticed that folks that are having a challenge around the area of income and wealth, a lot of the times there is this illusion of them being a victim, of them not having power or control over their own life. The second thing that I noticed that's a big difference between folks who experience financial success and those who don't is the people that experience financial success are very action-oriented. And they're also, what you mentioned earlier, willing to fail. You know what I mean? They're scared to fail, but they're willing to fail. They're willing to just put it out there, to be enthusiastic, to go for it, and to see what happens. And most folks that I find that are finding themselves in a bit of a struggle around money are they won't ever take action. They'll think and think and think, talk and talk and talk, but they won't just keep going one foot in front of the other. Let's try this. Let's try this. Let's try this. So those are probably two of the primary differences I see.
Okay. Now, if someone listening to this interview is currently not in the financial situation that they want to be in, then what would you say they should do right now to get themselves at least on the path towards financial freedom in the future?
One of the things that really worked for me in my own life was to take an honest look of how I was treating money. You know, what was my relationship with money? Was I, you know, the little bit that any of us have, what are you doing with it? Like, do you pay attention to it? Are you scared of it? Do you think it's, you know, the root of all evil? Do you think it's dirty? Like, really getting intimate with how you feel about this thing that we all call money. That's step number one. And there are a ton of fantastic books out there about, you know, how to change your money mindset and how to really kind of dive deep into this world and get your relationship with money and really improve it. But the second thing is this, like, what are you spending your money on? You know, and are you making enough? Like, are you putting enough value out into the world to get paid more money? When I was having a lot of challenges around money when I first started my career, I remember getting just super clear and going, you know what? Enough of this bullshit. I am not just going to like squeak by anymore. I'm done with credit card debt. I'm done with having all the credit card debt. I'm going to figure this out and make this work. So it got me really clear and really focused on what I wanted. And then I got my butt to work, Mark. I worked extra jobs, took extra shifts as a bartender, asked people if I could be their personal assistant. This was all while I was starting my business because I didn't want to be desperate for clients, but I knew that I could earn money. And I figured, you know what, I'm going to clear out this credit card debt. I'm going to handle this money thing and kick it and really own my worth. So for someone struggling right now, those kind of that two-pronged approach of really getting clear on, you know, do you piss it away? Do you think money is just like, oh, it grows on trees or it's all evil? Or, you know, what are all your beliefs around money and how are you treating it? And the second thing is, if you need more of it, it's like get to work. You know, if you need to find a new job, if you need to take an extra job, something. Take some kind of powerful, consistent action to bring more of it in and then be a very good steward of it when you have it.
Cool. No, I think that's really good advice. Would you say that it's important to, think that people that don't have much money should be saving money? Do you think they should be investing it? What are your thoughts on that?
It depends. It really, you know, that's such an interesting question. I think it really depends on each person's unique situation. So for example, you know, if hypothetically, if someone had a lot of credit card debt and they didn't have much in terms of investments, I would think that they should A, go find an incredible financial advisor, someone they could speak with that they could just show them their entire financial life. You know, do they own anything? Do they have insurance? You know, what are they earning right now? Someone who is a qualified professional who could really sit them down and say, hey, look, we need to handle this credit card debt first, but at the same time, you know, let's get you in a habit of saving. Maybe even if it's just as little as $50 a month. You know what I mean? While we kind of nab down these high interest credit cards. Again, that would be such a specific answer to each person's unique situation. But I feel like all of us have to empower ourselves and realize that the information is out there about how to be financially successful. And being financially successful doesn't necessarily mean that you're a millionaire or multimillionaire or billionaire. Many people don't want that or don't even need that much money. You know, but it just becomes about really owning your own power to manage it effectively and brilliantly and have a very symbiotic and pleasurable relationship with your wealth. So you know where it's coming from, you understand how it grows, you understand how it likes to be treated, and also how it doesn't like to be treated. You take a real hard, close look at where are you just throwing it away? You know what I mean? Is there late fees building up? Do you get tickets? Are there late fines for videos or, you know, whatever it is that you're kind of into, and get really real with yourself. And each person's situation is going to be very, very unique. But that's why we have qualified professionals out there, you know, who can certainly help.
Yeah, absolutely. No, that's fantastic advice. Now, I've got a couple of dating and relationships questions for you, because obviously you're a best-selling author of Make Every Man Want You, and you've also been interviewed by men such as David D'Angelo from W Dating and other people, because you also seem to have a lot of great advice on for men on how to attract women as well. What I want to do is start with the question for women, and then I'll go on to one for men. What would you say are the top five worst mistakes that women make when trying to attract their ideal partner, and how can women overcome each of these?
Okay, so I don't know if I could do five, but I'll certainly give it my go.
All right.
So the biggest mistake that women make when trying to attract the perfect guy, I believe, is making it an internal, it's more of an inner game error of thinking they're incomplete, thinking that they're half of the whole, that somehow, you know, Mr. Right is going to come and complete them, and then, you know, the clouds are going to part and trumpets will sound, and that somehow you know, Mr. Right's going to come along and everything's going to be magically perfect. They're going to have the perfect job. They're always going to be happy, blah, 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 blah. That's due to a big myth that we've all been sold, is that, you know, we're all half of a whole until we find our soulmate. That's just total BS, complete BS. Every human being on the planet is a complete human being as they are. And when you really get that, when you really get that nothing outside of you can save you, there's no relationship, there's no money, there's no job that can ever make you feel more complete than you are in this moment, something relaxes. And then all of a sudden, you're looking for someone else cool to hang out with, that you'd want to share your life with. You're not looking for someone to fix you. And I think that that's huge. I think that when women really get that, the energy with which they enter any kind of conversation, you know, whether it's in a bar, somebody gets fixed up on a blind date, is completely different. Guys can feel if a girl is desperate for someone to make her life magically better. And I don't know about you, Mark, how you feel about this, but if the tables were turned and a guy, you know, I was on a first date with him and I could sense that he thought I was the answer to his prayers, I'd want to run the other way. It's too much pressure.
Absolutely. Yeah.
Right? So that's one big mistake. The next big mistake is being like this perfect little doll when they first meet you. And then, you know, as the months or years go on, it kind of deteriorates and you turn into this kind of raving, bitchy, nagging lunatic when you had on like all your perfect behavior in the beginning. And then you just kind of let it all hang out as time goes on. You know, the easy fix for that is to just be yourself up front. You know, just don't put on airs. Obviously, we're all kind of conditioned to put our best foot forward. So I'm not suggesting that, you know, you show up on your first date like a slob with like stains on your t-shirt or anything like that. But, you know, when you first meet a guy, if he talks about, oh my God, I just love basketball so much, you know, don't lie and say, oh, I love basketball too. And then go home and try and research every basketball team so you can sound intelligent. You know what I mean? He's like, oh, okay, well, that's great. That's really cool that you like that. You know, and if he says, are you into basketball? And you're not, just say, no, I'm not. If you're interested in learning or you're open to learning, say that. And if you're not, say that. You know, be real, be transparent from the get-go. And you'll never find yourself in a situation where the guy's like, wait a minute, you've changed. You were so different when I first met you, but now you're like this different person. So that's mistake number two. And I would say, let me think of a third one for you. As far as women make, and it was about meeting Mr. Right, right? Women make in relationships.
Yeah, yeah, for meeting their ideal guy, or for keeping them happy as well. That's important as well.
Ooh, let's go to keeping them happy, because I think this is a big one that we all make and that I constantly watch myself for, is not treating your guy like a second class citizen. I don't know what happens for all of us. I think this is a crossover problem. Men do the same thing. Women do this as well, but we'll talk about it for the girls. You know, a lot of women, especially strong and powerful and assertive women, can treat their guys not only like second-class citizens, but like pansies. You know, like they don't know how to do anything and telling them they're always doing things wrong and you don't know what's up and, you know, I'll handle it. And it's basically emasculating the man. And I don't know any guy who wants to feel emasculated by his woman. So that's one of those things that we women really have to watch out for, because it's very tempting. You know, if a strong, assertive woman feels like she's smart and she's right and she's correct, she, you know, it's like, keep it in line. You know, no one wants to be treated like a second-class citizen. You know, men want to be treated with respect and with love and with softness and with caring and with understanding. No one wants a bulldozer to come in and career, you know, this is how it is and you better like it or shape up or ship out. So I think really coming back to this simple idea of really being kind to your man, important.
Yeah, no, that's really good. I think those are some really, really good tips there. Okay, so now let's have some advice for men. What do you think are the top mistakes that men make when trying to attract women, and how can men overcome each of these?
I think one of the biggest mistakes, we'll take it from the attraction standpoint, is not being genuine, like coming up with some kind of line or trick or, you know, something to get their attention. Creativity is awesome, but I believe that there is a subtle but important difference between like pulling out some kind of manipulative trick that you've heard, you know, would work, or you're trying to get her attention, versus like being cool and creative and just honest. You know, if you're interested in a girl, just say it. You know, even if you come up with a cool line or something like that. I don't know if I'm making myself very clear, but I've experienced a lot of guys that are, you know, they've been around the pickup circles. They've read the game. You know, they've read all these kind of traditional pickup books, and they're a bit robotic, and they all sound the same. They all look the same. They wear the same kind of shirts. They got the same hair gel going on. It's kind of disgusting. Just be yourself, like just really be honest and straightforward. And if you think someone's attractive, you know, and you're interested in her, like that's all you kind of need to say to women. Like, we don't really want that huge of a song and dance. Just want somebody straight.
Can I just say, just before carrying on to the next mistake you're going to mention, like, would you agree that, because this is something that I've always sort of thought anyway, but I just want to know what your thoughts are. Would you think that for men and for women, one of the most important things is that you're having a lot of fun, like regardless of whether you're actually with someone or not, and that when you actually go up to meet anybody, that you're actually in an internal state where you're having at least as much fun as that other person is having, if not more fun, so that you can bring their energy levels up rather than down.
Absolutely. I mean, you know, I want to hang out with fun people regardless if they're single, they're married, they're, you know, old, young, it doesn't matter. People want to be around fun people. You know, that's a given. So I agree with you 100%, 100%. You know, I think we'll move on to a second mistake that men make. I think also not being straightforward in terms of what they want. You know, if you don't want a girlfriend, or if you do want a girlfriend, it's like, say it. You know, I think where men can kind of get tripped up is, again, trying to be a player, you know what I mean, or trying to do this mysterious thing. It's like, God, a smart, engaged woman who has a lot going on has no space or time for bullshit. You know, it's just like, don't make us figure things out. We don't want to figure things out. If you don't want a relationship, that's cool. If you do want a relationship, that's great. But just, you know, be straightforward, be truthful. If you say you're going to call, call. If you don't want to call, don't tell us you're going to call. Like, it's like this really novel idea called honesty, which I think works very well. And then let's go to the keep it happy side for men, since we did that on the third space for women. I think for women, you know, what we want as far as in the realm of keeping us happy is to really, really feel appreciated. And for a lot of women, especially if you get into the stage where you're living together or you're married, you know, oftentimes doing things around the house, doing things that we perceive as helping us out, whether it's grocery shopping, you know, making dinner, taking out the garbage, or just straightening things up, sounds silly, but those score such huge points in women's book. You know what I mean? Like, for me, when Josh does things to take care of me in that sense, like, I could care less about flowers. I could care less about gifts. If he's helping me make my life easier and recognizing the spaces where I feel stress and like taking an active role in relieving that, forget it. He's got me head over heels forever.
That's really good advice, because that's the kind of thing that you don't see in the Hollywood movies, but actually makes a huge difference.
Oh, it's humongous, because again, like we started talking out about this, for a lot of women, you know, you add kids into the picture, if they have a career, if they have a business, you know, there's a lot on their plate. And most women really want to take care of their family. You know what I mean? Like they're excited to take care of the house and to make sure everyone's clean and fed and everything's running smoothly. And it can be a tremendous amount of pressure. So when a guy proactively steps in to say, how can I help? Or even beyond that, like takes a look around to see, oh, wow, the laundry's not done. Why don't I just go ahead and do that? Huge, way more important than chocolate or perfume or who gives a shit. Like I can buy my own jewelry, you know, like I don't really need him to do that. Like, but at the other stuff, it means a lot. It means that he's really paying attention and he really cares.
I just want to reiterate one of the pieces of advice that you gave a few minutes ago when you were giving it to the women about not being overcritical of your men. Sometimes guys help out women or start to in a relationship, like they'll do the washing or do something like that, and then you get some women that'll go ahead and just say, hey, you're doing it wrong, and then that sort of cuts the guy off from actually going ahead and doing these things.
So
I think it's great advice teaching men to do these things, but I also think, you know, it should be reiterated for women listening to this thinking, hey, how come my man's not doing this or that or what have you? Just and this may not be the answer, but I'm just saying, just ask yourself that question though. How critical are you of how they do it? It's all right to mention that that there are mistakes, but you've also got to be very I don't know. Guys need to, like you say about that emasculating, they need to feel appreciated at the same time when they do things. You know, you catch them doing the right thing, and then maybe just say, "Oh, that was wonderful that you did this." But just make sure that when you fold the shirts, can you do that?
Oh yeah. There's always very wonderfully effective, compassionate ways to, like you said, just really acknowledge all the good stuff. And I think there's always ways. I know when I've done things, and Josh is like, "Hey, can you do it this way?" There's usually just a tone and a lovingness with which the communication is delivered that makes a whole lot of difference. You know, like you say, hey, oh, can next time, this is awesome. But, you know, you give them a little kiss on the cheek and would you mind doing this as well or just making this fold this way? I don't think any guy would ever feel terrible about getting that kind of, you know, reception and a little bit of additional information, especially if it was delivered with appreciation and love.
It's interesting that you say that about tone. One thing that I've actually noticed without actually thinking about it until you just said those words there, but women that I see, and to a lesser extent, but still similar in some ways, men, but certainly from what I've noticed from being a guy, women that I see that are really successful with men seem to have a better way of of arguing, or not necessarily arguing, but just there's a tone about them.
Yes.
And from a guy's perspective, quite often you can sense that tone right from the very first date. And yes. Whether or not you get to the second date is part of it is just that you just get this feeling. I can't quite explain what it is, but certainly there are quite often more gentle ways of or at least more, like you say, compassionate or more understanding ways of saying things than being too abrupt.
Yes. Yeah. Guys can sense like a gal's going to be a bitch on wheels really fast. They're like, oof, I would not want to hang out with that one too long.
Yeah, just like girls probably can too, just when you meet a new girlfriend.
Yeah, oh, same thing. And even with guys, like you can kind of feel if they would be, if they're always telling stories or they're always holding court, like there's no softness in them. You know what I mean? There's no vulnerability. There's no open heart. You know, people are extremely intuitive and can pick things like that up very quickly.
Right. Well, Marie, recently you developed an online product called the Live in the Moment Booty Camp. Would you mind sharing with our listeners what is this all about?
Yeah, so you know what? It really sprung out of a lot of the work that I did in the book. You know, Make Every Man Want You is a bit of a Trojan horse, and it's all about training ourselves to live in the present moment with very practical step-by-step tools and strategies that people can use every day. You know, you don't have to sit up on a mountaintop or meditate, you know, for hours on end to discover how to live in the moment. There are actually shortcuts per se and really simple things that you can do to train yourself in this lifestyle. And that's really what I believe it is. So we had a lot of people writing in going, I love this. I want more. I want more. I want more. And I figured, you know, well, I need to provide that. I actually used to try and direct people to certain spiritual books, and they just kept kind of sending them back to me saying like, I can't understand this, or it's too long. Can't you just give me the cliff notes? So Live in the Moment Booty Camp is actually a 4-module program that walks you through all of the most powerful tools and strategies you need to really unwire all of the mental junk that all of us have in our heads. That constantly pulls you into the future, beat yourself up about the past. It's like this amazing toolkit for self-confidence and for allowing yourself to really be your best in each moment. And I didn't realize how powerful it was until we created it and the feedback started pouring in, women going like, oh my God, I thought this was going to be fun and I'd learn something, but this completely changed my whole life. And so we've actually, this is now the 2.0 version. So we have these incredible action guides, like step-by-step action guides to go along with each audio module. And there's video content as well. And it's just, it's an incredible, comprehensive, really, really fun program that will give you an inner operating system upgrade. You know, much like your computer, if you have faulty software or if you have viruses or bugs in your computer, it crashes. That's how most of us are operating until, I believe, you train yourself to live in the moment, and then it's like the best system upgrade you could ever imagine. No bugs ever.
Now, I noticed that on your website, which is at livebootycamp.com, I noticed that there's not just success stories from women, because you mentioned that women have had a lot of success, but I noticed that there are success stories from men as well. So this is obviously for both men and women, right?
Absolutely. It's for anyone. Again, only because I have over time accumulated quite a following of women. These strategies work for anyone. And we do have lots of men that have gone through the program. One guy, actually, he used these strategies to make an additional $75,000 in like, I don't know, I think it was under 3 months in his business, because his ability to not only concentrate on what was in front of him, but also tap into his intuition. He had a lot of different business opportunities and he knew which one was the right one to pick. And it's like, this has totally changed his game. He's gone from being like overwhelmed to absolutely able to really put his attention on what's important in each moment and, you know, and stay clear.
Would you mind just for everybody listening, just repeating what the web address is and spelling it out to people?
Oh, of course. So it's livebootycamp.com, and that's LIVE, B as in boy, OOTY, camp, CAMP.com. So livebootycamp.com.
Awesome. I just want to say a big thank you Marie, for the wealth of information that you've shared on this interview, and it's been really, really enjoyable for me, and I'm sure people out there listening will have gained a great deal of value from it.
Oh, thank you. It's a total honor, and thank you for the time and the attention, and yeah, my desire is always just to support people and having an amazing, amazing life. So thanks for having me.
And for everyone out there listening, take action with what you learn, and we'll see you next time. Bye, guys.